Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, September 10th. Europe has been calling the tune for much of the past 15 months in fits and starts, though lately it's just giving us the former. The continent and the Euro 17 nations using the currency, particularly the likes of Greece, threatens to drag us all down. If you could find one optimistic statement this week from a responsible policy official, you'd better check the date of the copy, because herewith is the reality check. World Bank President Robert Zoellick warned the risks to the global economy are intensifying. Quote, "We are moving into a dangerous period," he said. While the U.S. is likely to avoid a recession, escaping with slow growth, the Eurozone is facing a particularly sensitive time. Singapore's Minister of Finance told Bloomberg that the U.S. and European economies are stalling and weaker global growth will have an impact on Asia. Growth in the first two is in the 1% range. We're already at stall speed in the U.S. and Europe, which means we're now more likely than not to see a recession, he said. Shanmugaratnam talked of companies holding back on spending and consumers around the world facing a loss of confidence. Deutsche Bank's CEO, Joseph Ackermann, said, quote, "It is obvious not to say a truism that many European banks would not cope with writing down the government bonds held in the banking book to market value. A devastating statement, though no surprise to readers of my columns, as I've been talking about lack of transparency when it comes to European banks for well over a year now. In fact, I've hammered away at Spain's situation. So on Tuesday, what did we see there? One of Spain's largest savings banks reported an increase in bad loans to 19% of overall lending from 9% at the end of last year," exactly what I've been talking about. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development now predicts a contraction in GDP for Italy in the third quarter and a contraction in Germany in the fourth quarter. The OECD predicts growth in the U.S. will be 1.1% in Q3 and 0.4% in Q4, compared with forecasts of 2.9% and 3% at the end of May. That's staggering. OECD chief economist Pier Carlo Padoan said, quote, "Growth is turning out to be much slower than we thought 3 months ago, and the risk of hitting patches of negative growth has gone up." Christine Lagarde, the new managing director of the IMF, said the outlook had darkened suddenly over the summer. Quote, there has been a clear crisis of confidence that has seriously aggravated the situation. Measures need to be taken to ensure that this vicious circle is broken. The spectrum of policies available is narrower because a lot of ammunition was used in 2009, but if governments, institutions, and central banks work together, we'll avoid recession, she told Der Spiegel. Later in the week, Lagarde said, quote, "The bottom line is that global activity has slowed and downside risk have increased, and at the same time, the global rebalancing and demand that we were all expecting for sustainable growth to take place has stalled. The key message is that at this stage and given the economic circumstances that we're facing, countries and policymakers in those countries around the world must act now, must act boldly, and must act together." Well, but governments in the Eurozone aren't working together. Outgoing European Central Bank President Jean-Claude Trichet said, quote, "Risks to the economic outlook are on the downside in an environment of particularly high uncertainty." As he pledged a very thorough analysis of incoming data and developments, language allowing the ECB to begin to lower rates from its benchmark policy mark of 1.5% as soon as next month. The ECB revised its forecast for Eurozone GDP in 2011, pegging it at 1.6%, down from 1.9% in June, and then falling to 1.3% in 2012. At least the ECB says the inflation outlook is much improved, forecasting only 1.7% in 2012. Trichet then went after Germany, as sniping politicians there questioned his leadership. Quote, "We have delivered price stability over the first 12 years of the euro, impeccably, said Trichet. I would very much like to hear congratulations for an institution that has delivered price stability in Germany over almost 13 years at 1.55% approximately, which is better than it has been obtained in this country over the last 50 years. Speaking of Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel won a victory when the Constitutional High Court rejected a series of legal challenges to last year's Greece bailout one, but the court insisted a new German parliamentary budget committee of 41 be consulted in the future in advance of any new bailout measures, which could complicate future crisis management amongst the Euro 17. Had the court declared the bailouts unconstitutional, it would have been devastating. Merkel expects to win a government majority in the Bundestag on September 29 when the vote on the European Financial Stability Facility comes up. The thing is, when it comes to the needed political leadership in Europe, consider this. The three key players these days, Merkel, Francis Sarkozy, and Italy's Berlusconi, all have approval figures and/or recent poll tests in the 20s. Merkel's Christian Democratic Union scored a whopping 23.1% of the vote in her home state of Mecklenburg-Western Pomerania last Sunday, its worst tally since voting began in the state in 1990 after reunification, with another key vote coming up in Berlin on September 18. Merkel's coalition has been defeated or lost votes in all six German state elections this year, not exactly an endorsement for putting more taxpayer money into bailouts. But as we entered the weekend, and with European and U.S. stocks swooning all over again, there were news stories of severe strains in the short-term lending markets. While Germany was rumored to be drawing up plans to shore up their banks should Greece default, an operation you can be sure is also taking place in France and elsewhere. Additionally, ECB executive board member Jürgen Stark resigned on Friday over policy differences on how to fight the debt crisis. Stark has been an opponent of the ECB's bond purchases for the likes of Italy and Spain and was supported by the central banks of Austria and the Netherlands, as well as many of his fellow Germans, so his resignation is a huge blow less than 2 months before Trichet's departure when his term ends. The ECB has spent $176 billion on the bonds of distressed governments in an attempt to keep their yields low, but it can't do so forever. Unlike our Federal Reserve, for example, with its technically unlimited balance sheet. Stark argues the bond purchases blur the line between fiscal and monetary policy. Take the case of Italy. This week, the Italian Senate finally passed a $76 billion austerity program demanded by the IMF and ECB after the Berlusconi government began to backtrack on initial proposals such as a tax hike on the rich. The biggest immediate technical issue, however, aside from Greece's imminent default, is the European Financial Stability Facility, the EFSF, which hasn't been ratified by the 17 Euro parliaments yet, with Slovakia saying it wouldn't address the issue until December. Once funded, then the issue is, what does it do? Europe's central bankers want the EFSF to take over the bond buying duties if markets remain skittish over Italy and Spain. Christine Lagarde, however, wants the facility to be used for increasing the level of bank capital to, quote, cut the chains of contagion. So, just as the U.S. Treasury did in 2008, force Europe's biggest banks to accept capital injections using both ESFF and public funds if necessary. Oh, and this week, the Dutch, who hate the Greeks, are calling for an EU budget czar that would lord over all 17 nations using the euro and have the power to tax and spend as he or she saw fit, while anyone who then didn't cooperate would be kicked out of the eurozone. Well, you can imagine how that went over in some countries. By the close on Friday, Germany's 10-year Bund traded at an all-time record low yield of 1.76% in a flight to safety, while Greece's 2-year note saw its yield rise to 64% last I saw. Not a bad return, right, seniors? Of course, to beat a dead horse, Europe, like the U.S., needs growth, and as some of the preceding shows, that is not forthcoming. Europe made its debt bed, and now it's sleeping in it. The only way Greece gets its bailout money is to show it's serious about reforming its ways, so the government had to announce a further 20% cut in government employment this week. The economy shrank a revised 7.3% in the second quarter. Elsewhere, Italy's austerity program deeply slashes local governments and public services, which both impact the middle class. Industrial production in Spain fell 2.8% in July. Even German exports fell for a second consecutive month as it slows. Non-Euro Britain saw retail sales decline in August for a second consecutive month, and on and on. Meanwhile, general strikes in places like Italy, Greece, and Spain are growing in intensity, and it's only a matter of time before the anarchist and far-right increasingly have their way. Turning to Washington, President Obama unveiled his highly anticipated American Jobs Act, which, as it turned out, was a little bigger than expected, $447 billion versus the $300 billion or so being bandied about, but it was hardly bold. Simply more of the same, extending payroll tax cuts and unemployment insurance coverage further, more infrastructure spending, tax credits for business if they hire someone, and as the president said, every proposal I've laid out tonight will be paid for. To which the New York Post editorialized with monopoly money, no doubt. Now, to be fair, much of what Obama threw out there meets the approval of congressional Republicans who were under the gun themselves because their approval rating is far worse than Obama's own dismal numbers. So there's going to have to be some agreement between the two parties, and soon, or Republicans will be blamed as much as Democrats if the unemployment rate is still hanging around 8.5% or higher come November 2012. And therein lies the problem. Obama desperately wants to campaign against Congress, and Republicans can't be seen as simply being the party of no. So we're likely to come up with a sizable package that isn't paid for, whereupon it will be up to the new 12-member bipartisan supercommittee to come up with even more budget cuts to pay for the American Jobs Act. And one member already, Republican Senator John Kyle of Arizona, said he would walk out if defense was cut further. I like Kyle, but this is incredibly stupid. And as you've seen from my musings of the past year or so, I'm sick of those who just blindly say defense can't be cut because of all the emerging threats like China, blah, blah, blah. What about the freaking $60 billion in total waste and fraud in Iraq and Afghanistan, a figure that is probably far higher? What about the tens of billions spent on weapons systems and aircraft that either aren't needed or don't work? But I've said enough on this topic, save for an Eisenhower-related quote in my random musings column. The bottom line is the deficit will continue to rise, and I'm not changing my opinion that while Europe is meeting its Waterloo in 2011, we'll meet ours in terms of a true deficit crisis in 2012. Without entitlement reform, which the president hinted at in his speech, but for which I'm not holding my breath, we're doomed. And the other day I saw the perfect example of how the debate on this paramount issue is twisted and the American people manipulated. In New York City, they are holding a special election to replace Congressman Anthony Weiner, and it's between Republican Bob Turner and Democrat David Weprin. Weprin, some say, is a lightweight with the brain of a squirrel. He's such a lightweight that construction guy Turner has a good shot in a heavily Democratic district. The district itself is likely to be redistricted out down the road. So I see this Weprin campaign ad, and there it is, the usual scaremongering. Bob Turner is going to raise retirement age on Social Security recipients, and Bob Turner is going to take away your Social Security and Medicare, and so on. But of course, we have to reform Social Security, and part of that process is to raise the retirement age. Anyone with more than the brain of a squirrel, when you sit them down and explain a few simple facts, understands that. But any Republican talking of reforming Social Security is, of course, pilloried, branded with threatening to take it away. When every single legitimate reform plan out there excludes those over the age of 50 from having to suffer any future benefit cuts unless through means testing, it's just this mindset that is killing America. Stocks resumed their losing ways after a mixed performance the prior week as the Dow Jones dropped 2.2% to 10,992, while the S&P 500 lost 1.7% and NASDAQ 0.5%. For the year, the losses on the three range from 5 to 8%. Smack dab where I said we'd finish the year, which really doesn't mean anything today because we still have four wild months to go. That's all for this week. I'll be with you next Saturday, though the timing of the message might be later. I'm doing some traveling. I haven't figured out where I'm going yet. For more information, go to stocksandnews.com, click on Week in Review. I have all kinds of thoughts on 9/11, and our thoughts and prayers are with the victims and their families. Take care. Have a great week.